I'm pulling away from the curb because I dropped my son off at school. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work. Okay, so I recently did a podcast about plane shift because I realized, somebody had pointed out on my blog that I had done a podcast on Invasion because I had Bill Rose on, who was the lead designer of Invasion, and we had talked all about it. But I had not done the two sets that came after it in the block, Plane Shift and Apocalypse. And one of my goals is I would like to have a podcast for every single set made, every expansion. And I've done a lot of them, but I've not yet done all of them. So I'm slowly getting through to do all of them. So as a companion, a podcast to Plane Shift, I'm doing one today on Apocalypse. So Apocalypse has a pretty important place in my heart. So let's go back a little bit and talk about the making of Invasion and how we got to Apocalypse. So for those that don't know, Invasion, so Bill Rose becomes head designer during the previous block, but the first block that he has sort of full control over is Invasion. And Bill's idea is that he wants to start adding themes into blocks. That the blocks, like before that, the blocks were about two mechanics. And now it's like, okay, what if the blocks were about something? I mean, we realize Magic is, you know, far enough into his life here. Invasion came out in 2000, so we're talking 7 years into Magic. Magic came out originally in 93. And so the idea is, okay, let's have blocks mean something. And Bill decided that the best theme to start with was multicolor. Multicolor had been introduced in Legends and had shown up in different amounts since then. So Bill's idea was, let's not do multicolor for a little while, build up some demand for it, and then just blow it out in a set. So the original idea when we were first doing Invasion was it would do all the colors. Now, as I explained in my previous, the Planeship podcast, back in the day, we did not treat the colors equally. That we treated ally colors better than we treated enemy colors. We made more cards that were ally colors, and in general, the ally colors were made stronger than the enemy colors. Just in this idea that the way we, like, one of the ideas is how we show allies is it's stronger. The connections between allies are stronger than the connections between enemies. We later came to realize that that was not great. Like, Magic should have as much flexibility as possible. Why penalize people for playing enemy colors? And so we moved away from that. But really, that was not until Ravnica. Not until, so Ravnica was the first set after I became head designer. And that was the beginning of sort of block planning. But, interesting, Invasion block really was the first kind of block planning. But we kind of backed into it, and that's the interesting story. So, we're working on Invasion, and the idea I think we had originally was the set would be like 3/4 ally and 1/4 enemy. So the idea was there'd be less enemy, it'd be more keeping in line with how we thought of ally and enemy. But the idea was Invasion would have enemy things. And then it dawned on me, and interestingly, it dawned on Henry Stern. So Henry Stern and I each went to Bill and pitched the exact same idea. What I said to Bill is, hey, you know, the way that blocks used to work is the first set would just do stuff and make two main mechanics, two named mechanics, and the future sets would just expand upon those and do their own versions of stuff. But I was sort of like, well, what if, look, we have a lot of cool enemy things. What if we just save the enemy stuff? What if the last set, and basically a large set back in the day was about twice the size of a small set. So if we did a large set of ally, a small set of ally, and then an enemy set, small set of enemy, it was about 1/4 of the block, which is what we were planning to do anyway. And so I pitched this idea. Henry also, independent to me, pitched the idea. And Bill said, okay, that sounds cool. The interesting thing about it was, at the time, one of the challenge of blocks that blocks always had is what we call the third set problem. So we do the first set. Yay, first set. New theme. People are very excited. We do the first small set. People are a little less excited. But we're doing twists on it and doing something. And normally it was the third set that people just had grown tired of the theme by the third set. And they're like, oh, you know. And so we were always trying to find ways to, like, how do we make the third set a little more exciting? And so Apocalypse was the first set that said, well, what if we just save something? What if we do, it's not more of the same. What if we just have something missing and we deliver on it in the third set? And the success of Apocalypse was one of a few sets where the third set sold better than the second set. That had never happened, I believe, to the best of my knowledge. I mean, I'm trying to remember early days, but I don't think that had happened. I think the way it would work is we do a main set. Let's say it sold 100%. We then do the first small set. It would sell pretty close to 80% of the large set. And then we do a second small set, and it would sell about 60% of the first set. There just was a decline that... And when we did Apocalypse, it was the first time that the third set didn't decline from the second set. In fact, I think it went up slightly. And we learned a couple things. One is we learned the idea that if you save something, you can build something in the third set. Although that proved to be... The third set problem didn't necessarily go away. This helped with the third set. Didn't make the problem go away completely. The other issue is I think what we realized was there was a pent-up demand for enemy color things. Why? Because we just hadn't made a lot. Hey, Legends came out, and Legends had no enemy color stuff in it. The two color were Ally. The three color were Arc slash Shard, meaning it was a color and its two allies. The Dark, which was the next set, did have a couple of enemy cards in it, like two, I think. So we occasionally did enemy. It wasn't that they didn't exist, but there weren't a lot of them. I mean, there were a very small number of them. So the idea of doing all enemy, we really were doing something that there was a huge void to be filled. There were not a lot of enemy color cards. A really small number. And me seeing how that played out really inspired me. When I sort of took over as head designer and I started doing block planning, it was very much influenced by that, by what had happened with Invasion. I'm like, I liked what happened. What if what happened to Invasion happened all the time? What if that was the default? So anyway, Apocalypse was pretty important in that regard, in that it really was the precursor of block planning. Okay, so Apocalypse was codenamed Shanghai. As I pointed out, all the cards in this set had names that were Asian cities. Interestingly, now, many years later, we are doing, in our alphabet naming system, we're doing cities of the world. So we are kind of coming back around. We did cities early on. The set had 143 cards, 55 commons, 44 uncommons, 44 rares. Mythic rare was not a thing yet. That 143 was the size of small sets for quite a while. So the design team was led by Paul Peterson, who has gone off and done a lot of other game design. You might see him in the store. He is a prolific game designer. So the design team was him, Randy Bueller, Charlie Catino, Taewon Woodruff, and me. And then the development team was led by Mike Elliott, was Randy and Charlie, Mike Donay, and Robert Kuchera. So all people nobody that is still here. Charlie doesn't work on Magic anymore. Charlie Catino oversees our Duel Masters game. Okay, so as I explained in my Planeship podcast, the way the small sets tended to work is the first set would introduce mechanics, and then the small set would do riffs on those mechanics. So there were a couple things introduced. The two big mechanics in Invasion were Kicker and Domain, although Domain went unnamed. Kicker was pay an extra cost. I mean, Kicker's deciduous now. Hopefully you've heard of Kicker. One of the reasons... So this is the first... Invasion was the first set Kicker appeared in. It's something that Bill Rose came up with. One of the reasons we liked it is you could do off-color Kicker, which worked well in making multicolor cards. And then Domain was an unnamed mechanic that scaled based on how many different basic land types you had. So this set... one other thing I introduced. So Invasion introduced split cards. Okay, I've told the story infinite times. But whenever I do a podcast, I don't want to not tell a story just because I've told it before. So I will do an abbreviate. I did a whole podcast on split cards. The short version of this is I made Unglued. We did market research. The number one card or cards, whatever you want to say, of Unglued was a card called BFM, left side and right side. They were two cards. It was so big, a 99-99 creature, that you needed to have both cards in your hand and cast them at the same time. They cost 15 black mana for a $99.99, the largest magic creature we've ever seen. Even today, the largest creature. BFM was the most popular card. And it came from us really messing around with printing, right? A card so big it was on two cards. So I said, okay, well, if a card so big it was on two cards, people would like, how about a card so small that two cards fit on a single card? So the inspiration for split cards was, what if one card had two cards on it? And if you turn a magic card sideways, you can fit two that look pretty similar to a magic card. They're slightly wider, but... and so the idea was, what if we did that? And so I made a cycle of ally color cards. So they were gold cards. They were split cards in that they were two separate spells, but they were in ally colors. I made them for Unglue 2. That set got put on a hiatus, never to get made. So when we were making Invasion, I went to Bill and I said, hey, I think this is a really cool mechanic. It fits into our multicolor theme. We should make it. Bill liked it, put it in the set. The design team member was me, Bill, and Mike Elliott. Mike did not like them. I thought they were dumb. And Mike said we should not put them in the set. But I liked them, Bill liked them, and that was two-thirds of the design team. Plus, Bill was leading the design team. So we put them in. When the set went to development, I think Richard Garfield, wasn't designing Magic at the time, he was off making other card games and other games for Wizards, he thought they were cool. But other than Richard, nobody liked them. Brand team didn't like them. The rest of R&D didn't like them. Customer service didn't. Nobody liked them. There was a point literally in the building where it was me, Bill, and Richard, the three people that liked them. And the very first meeting of development, Henry Stern, who led the development team, said, okay, can we just kill these? And I'm like, whoa, Henry, we got to at least play with them before we get rid of them. You know, maybe they're really fun. I knew they were. Henry agreed we would play with them. And then as we played with them, they were fun. It's fun to have a choice between two card effects. It was something that we really didn't do. Most of the time when you had a choice, it was something like Charms, where the cost is always the same, but you choose what effect. But split cards had two different costs, so you could do two different effects. And you could make the effect match whatever size you wanted, because you had a mana cost for it. So anyway, we put them in Invasion, and they ended up being a major hit. Bill and I managed to keep them in the set. We even managed to keep them in the way that I had designed them, which is they're two little mini cards. There were other ways you could have done that weren't quite as pretty. But anyway, split cards came out. So when it was time for Apocalypse, we're like, of course, we need to do enemy color split cards, right? We did the ally ones. We only did five of them in Invasion. We only did five of them in Apocalypse. But they were... the other story that was really funny about Invasion was... one of the test sheets, someone took a picture at the printing plant or something. One of the sheets, there was a picture online. And the uncommon sheet had the split cards on it. And people could see the split cards, but they didn't believe we were printing that. So they're like, oh, this isn't a final sheet. That slot's going to be one of two cards. And they weren't sure yet, so they put that there to represent it's one of two cards. People didn't, when they saw it with their own eyes, they didn't even believe what it was. So it did come out. People really liked them. So we did more. So we did some enemy color ones. And I think the most powerful split card from Invasion Block was actually in Apocalypse. It was the red and blue one called Fire and Ice. So the way it worked was the two names had an implied and. So one was called Fire, one was called Ice. Fire cost one and a red. And it did, you could divide your damage any way you wanted. And then Ice costs one and a blue, and then you can tap target permanent and draw a card. And that was a very powerful card. That card saw a lot of play. Okay, now we get into Kicker. So the way Kicker worked, we did normal Kicker, plane shift mess around with alternate cost Kicker. So the one thing I was interested in, so Mike and I had the same idea, slightly different. So the idea was, could you have a card, a creature, that's in one color, and then you could kick it, it had two different kick costs. Instead of one kicker cost, it had two kicker costs. And you could pay one of the kicker costs or both of the kicker costs. It was up to you. So Mike made what he called the Battle Mages, and they were in Plane Shift. And the Battle Mages basically had two enter the battlefield effects, sort of. You could think of them as kind of like spells. Which is, when I cast this creature, I could have these additional spells come with the creature. I had a different take on it, what we ended up calling the Volvers. So the idea of the Volver for me was, I didn't want to generate effects. I wanted to change what the creature was. The idea was, what if you paid the cost, the creature got bigger? You put +1/+1 counters on the creature, and it would gain abilities. So the idea is, so let me use Necrovolver as my example. So I would have a black creature, and then you could cast it, you could have a green kicker and a white kicker, black's enemies. And then if you did that, it would get bigger, and depending on whether you play green or white, you get a different ability. So the challenge of this was, how do I know what I cast, right? So the idea for all of the Volvers and the Battle Mages is they cost 2 generic mana and 1 colored mana, and they were 2/2 creatures. And the idea was, well, I get bigger if I cast green mana, and I get bigger if I cast white mana. But so the way it works is, if you cast the green kicker, you would get trample. And if you cast the white one, you would get an early version of lifelink. Lifelink didn't exist yet, but written out. And so the idea was you could get either. But let's say I only kicked it once. How would I know whether I did the green one or the white one? And so the solution was, we had different numbers of +1/+1 counters. So for example, the way it worked is Necrovolver was 2 and a black for a 2/2 creature. But then if you cast one in a green, it got 2 +1/+1 counters and trample. And if you cast just a single white kicker, it got 1 +1/+1 counter. I'm going to say lifelink. Just be aware it was written out lifelink, so very close to lifelink. I'm just going to say lifelink from now on. Okay, so the cool thing about this is I had a couple different options. If I spent 2 in a black, I got a 2/2 vanilla creature. If I spent 2 black and a white, so 4 mana, but one of which is white, I now have a 3/3 creature with lifelink. If I cast 3 black-green, I now have a 4/4 creature with trample. Or if I cast 3 black-green-white, I now have a 6/6 creature, 6/6/5, sorry, a 5/5 creature with trample and lifelink. And so that the idea was, because you got a different number of +1/+1 counters, you could look at the creature and say, oh, well, a 3/3 creature has lifelink, a 4/4 creature has trample, a 5/5 creature has trample and lifelink. So we ended up putting these, I think we called the, we put these in the final set, and we ended up calling them Volvers. So this was sort of, once again, we evolved Kicker. A lot of what we did in Apocalypse was mirrored what we did in Planeshift. So Planeshift was about ally creatures, but then started tapping into 3-color, casting Arc/Shards, a color and 2 allies. So what we did in Apocalypse is the same thing, but went to Wedge. So the idea is you can cast creatures. There were some spells, for example, that were in 3 colors. And when you drafted, you had the opportunity to draft there. Now, I will say, the way you drafted was you drafted Invasion, then Planeshift, then Apocalypse. So a lot of what happened was you had the ability to play into 3 colors, and you could draft such that you could pick up the enemy color stuff in the 3rd pack. So it had an interesting draft environment. Complex, but interesting. So we did more Kicker. I think we did a little bit of Domain. We didn't do a lot with Domain, if I remember correctly. The one thing we did do, though, in the set is we did 5 vertical cycles. So a vertical cycle is something that appears at common, uncommon, and now rare, mythic rare, at the time rare, because mythic rare wasn't a thing. So what we did is we put an ability in each of the 5 colors and then made a vertical cycle out of it. White had what we call flag bearers, which was a creature type. Flag bearers had the special ability that if you had a targeted creature, and there was a flag bearer on the battlefield on your opponent's side, you must target the flag bearer. It took all, anything that targeted must target, anything that targeted one thing must target it. Then we had the Whirlpool. All these, by the way, were not actually named mechanics. These were nicknames. Some of them had them in the name. So Whirlpool were creatures that when they entered the battlefield, you could choose some number of cards and shuffle them into your library and then draw that many cards. Black had an ability called Siphon, where when it entered the battlefield, you would pay some amount of life and draw some amount of cards. I think it went 1, 2, 4 is what it did. But the idea is the common entered and you paid 1 life and drew 1 card. This was an enter the battlefield effect, or an enters effect now. Red has something called Bloodfire, which allowed you to pay a red mana and sack the creature to deal some amount of damage. And the damage got bigger as it went up in rarity. And then in green, we had Penumbra creatures. Penumbra creatures, when they died, you created a token, a black token. These one on green cards that was the same size as the creature that died. So you know, I have a 3/3 that dies into a black token 3/3. So the idea is whitehead flag bearers, bluehead whirlpool, blackhead siphon, redhead bloodfire, and greenhead penumbra. We also had the envoys. So the envoys was a cycle. They cost 3 generic mana and a colored mana. And when they entered, you revealed cards from the top of your library. You revealed 4 cards. And then every card that shared a creature type with what the envoy was, you would put in your hand, and the rest went to the bottom of your library. The set, by the way, did have a lot of enemy stuff. It had enemy. Something else we had done in Invasion. At the time, there were only, usually creatures had one creature type. And I was really trying to expand. I thought Magic would be better if creatures had more creature types. I really liked creature types. I was very into Typhle and things like that. So, I convinced Bill in Invasion, we did a cycle of creatures that cost 2 mana that were multicolored, and then they had one creature type from each color. So the idea was you could be a goblin and a zombie, I think. Anyway, we did another cycle of those here. So, like, once again, we did parallels we could, where we had done something Invasion. We did the enemy color version of it. Also, we had something called the Apprentices in Plane Shift, which was a creature that had an activated cost for 1 colored mana of each of its 2 allies in Plane Shift, enemies here in Apocalypse, and so you could cast them. So we had Disciples that were the Apocalypse version of what Plane Shift had done with the Apprentices. We had enchantments called Sanctuaries. The idea of a sanctuary was it was in 1 color. If you had one of the enemy colors, you would get an ability every turn. And if you had both, the ability would get larger. We had the Volvers, as I talked about. We did do wedge spells. And like I said, there were not a lot of... in fact, this might be... we might have done 1 or 2, but like this is the first time we did a cycle of wedge spells, and maybe the first time we did wedge spells. We had not done a lot of 3-color magic, and when we did, we tended to do the shard / arcs. So anyway, Apocalypse had a lot going in it. So I just wanted to talk about a few of the cards from Apocalypse. There were some memorable things. Oh, before I get to, well, let's start with a cycle. So in Invasion, we introduced the tap lands, which were multicolored cards, dual lands, that just enter the play tapped. For this set, once again, we still weren't out of the mindset. Like, once again, we made 3/4 ally cards, 1/4 enemy cards in the block. We still weren't treating enemy at the same way. So the dual lands we made were pain lands. The original pain lands had been in Ice Age, and we had never made the enemy pain lands. And so we finally made the enemy pain lands here. And the pain lands were at the time, were popular cards. But we liked the idea also that they had pain to them, so it felt like an enemy. But okay, so let's talk about some of the cards in the set. There's some fun stories about a few of the cards. First is Spiritmonger. So Spiritmonger was a 3-black-green 6/6. When it hits your opponent, it's got a saboteur ability. When it does combat damage to an opponent, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. And then it has 2 abilities. 1, for black mana, it can regenerate. And then for green mana, it can change its color. And color changing used to mean a little bit more. This is back in the day where, like, our kill spells didn't necessarily kill black things and stuff like that. Okay, so the story of Spiritmonger is we did a contest where we asked the players to come up with a card concept. This was before You Make the Card. You Make the Card didn't happen until the website started in 2002. And the idea here was it was kind of You Make the Card concept. And so people sent in ideas for a card. We picked one of them and used that as our art description to make the card. And so it was an early, I think we would later in, once the website starts up, do You Make the Card, where we let players pick all the component pieces. What color should it be? What card type should it be? What are the abilities and stuff? But this is sort of a precursor to it. Pernicious Deed. 1 black-green for an enchantment. X and sack and destroy all artifacts, creatures, and enchantments that cost X or less. This is probably the card that saw the most tournament play out of the set. One of the things is no single color can destroy everything. I mean, white comes the closest. And I guess artifacts, creatures, enchantments, white can destroy. But we were trying to make something that, at the time, that sort of mixed the power. Like, black is really good at killing creatures, and green is good at killing artifacts and enchantments. So get them together, and now you can kill a whole bunch of stuff. Another real popular card was called Phyrexian. So Pernicious Deed, real quickly, was we were kind of playing around in what can we do that's kind of efficient that we wouldn't make as a monocolor spell. And so we really were looking for what's a cool thing we could do. And we didn't want to do a card like this in mono white. So it ended up being a cool black green card. Phyrexian Arena costs one black as an enchantment. At the beginning of each life, of each upkeep, you would lose a life and draw a card. So we had, that theme ran a little bit through the set. Like I said, there was a vertical cycle. The idea of paying life for card drawing. It's something black had done a little bit before. We were just leaning into it a little bit. It was a little mini theme of the set. Vindicate. Talk about cards. Talk about any color cards that we couldn't do in monocolor. So Vindicate is cost one white black. It's a sorcery. And it says destroy target permanent. So Magic had one time before made the text destroy target permanent. It was on a green card in Arabian Nights that cost six mana. Called Desert Twister. The problem is green is not supposed to kill creatures. I mean, you can fight them and stuff. You can use your creatures to destroy their creatures, but you can't just, without any creatures in play, destroy creatures. Green can't do that. I had a big fight during 5th edition. They ended up putting Desert Twister in. I tried to save it. At the time, the color council was me, basically. I was the one that cared about it, and I was constantly fighting about not breaking color pie and stuff. It ended up going in 5th edition partly because they didn't have a good other answer to put in. But anyway, when we got here, it said, okay, you want to have destroy target permanent. Great. Not every effect can go in monocolor, but they can go in multicolor. And so Vindicate was a nice, clean, simple, like, okay, you want destroy target permanent, fine. And it's half the cost of Desert Twister. So Desert Twister was, even though it shouldn't have done it because green shouldn't have done it, was also overcosted. Another popular creature, Desolation Angel, cost three black, so five mana, two of which was black, 5/4 flying creature, it's an angel. When it enters the battlefield, you destroy all land. It's got, like, Armageddon built into it. But if you pay white, if you pay the kicker, your land is saved. It only destroys your opponent's land. There was also, this was a mirror, there was a Desolation Giant. It wasn't as popular. It did the same thing in red, except it was a giant rather than an angel. Chromat. So Chromat was a five-color creature. We did not have a lot of those back in the day. White, blue, black, red, green. So it costs five mana, one of each color. It's 5/5 creature. And then it had five abilities, each in each was an enemy activation. For white and black, you could destroy target. You could destroy any blocking creature, any creature that blocked it. So sort of death touchy. For blue and red, it could fly. For black and green, it could regenerate. For red and white, you got +1/+1 till end of turn. And for green and blue, you could put it on the top of your library. So you could sort of save it. If someone's going to kill it, you could spend mana to... I mean, it would cost your draw, but you could save it. And Chromat was quite popular. Like I said, we just hadn't made a lot of multicolor. I mean, there was Sliver Queen. There was a few. But it wasn't... There weren't very many. It was pretty special. Nowadays, there's more five-color... Just because we made a lot of cards. Two more cards, and we'll be out of time. Fervent Charge, one white, black, red for an enchantment. Creatures you control when they attack get +2/+2. So good example of, look, this is a three-color, it's a permanent, it costs three colors. I don't even know if that existed before this set. It definitely was, we really, like I said, one of the reasons that was so popular was there was pent-up demand for enemy color and wedge stuff. Finally, one of my favorite, Unnatural Selection. An enchantment that costs one and a blue, and for one mana, you choose a creature type other than wall. I'll explain that in a second. Then target creature becomes that creature type. Why other than wall? Because at the time, walls had rules text baggage on them. Walls, by definition, could not attack. So if you turned a creature into a wall, definitionally, it could not attack. We later would take that away. We'd make the defender ability, granted all walls defender, but at the time, legendary was for creatures was a creature type legend, which carried the weight of the legendary super type. It was a creature type, and then walls carried can attack. So when we messed around with changing creature type, we had to be careful about legends and walls because they actually had effects when you did that beyond Like right now, when you change, it's a marker, so other things can be affected by it. It can other effects could impact it, but none of our creature types anyway carry any rules weight anymore. Anyway, Apocalypse was a really big hit, and for a while, it was the best-selling third set we'd ever had. And it really, like I said, it made us rethink a lot of things. It inspired me the idea of block planning. It really made us, we started doing more bigger swings in the third, like more movements in the third set where we'd make bigger changes. But anyway, it was a fun set, and like I said, a pretty popular set. And I think it also taught us the importance of the enemy stuff. I think the reason when I did Ravnica that I made it even, that I did Allen enemy at even amounts, part of that was inspired by me seeing the impact of Apocalypse and how popular enemy stuff was. So Apocalypse had a huge impact on me as head designer, and it definitely influenced what I did. So anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed the look at Apocalypse. Like I said, I will continue my quest to do a podcast on every single Magic expansion ever. I'm getting close. But anyway, I hope you enjoy this, but I'm now at work, so we all know what that means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking Magic, it's time for me to be making Magic. I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.